What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Experience,
the podcast about overcoming struggles and adversity and how that relates to addiction, recovery, and health. I am your host and the CEO of Elevate Addiction Services, Angie Manson.
And I'm Dallas Terrell, co-host and life intervention counselor at Elevate. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's jump right in.
All right, cool. Well, welcome to the show, Donna. We're so glad to have you. Thanks for being here. I'm just going to kind of give you a little intro real quick because we're so excited to have you. So Donna Spear is an author, speaker, recovery expert, and a coach. She's also a nationally certified recovery coach 1 and 2, a nationally certified interventionist, and the CEO of Recovery Coaching Experts. She is a survivor of childhood and sexual abuse, suicide attempts, and a drug and alcohol addiction. Donna knows personally, firsthand, all phases of a recovery journey and has mentored thousands of women for over 32 years.
Wow.
So there's that. Donna, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good, Dallas. Thanks for having me. Hi, Angie. I'm glad to be here.
Same. Glad to have you.
Yeah, of course. How's your day been? How is everything? You excited?
Oh, man, I just moved to Scottsdale. We just had our third pod delivered today, so I am up to my ear in U-Haul boxes.
Oh, unpacking and yeah, not fun.
Sorting, unpacking. I'm finding things that I don't recall buying all this stuff. You know, I mean, it's like I never knew I had so much stuff. I just have stuff. It's amazing. I'm like, when did I acquire so many pillows, sleeping pillows? You know what I mean? It's like I don't ever remember buying like 11 king pillows.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just like bizarre. It's bizarre. And they're all suctioned in those giant Ziploc bags. So then you open them up and it's like, now where do I put them?
They all expand and take up so much space.
It's a quality problem. It's a quality problem.
Yeah. That means you've got to have a lot of guests over for sleepovers, I guess.
That's it. And you know what? We moved here 2 months ago and I'm not kidding. My husband, he has invited everybody. For a year, we've been saying, we're going to Scottsdale. We're going to Scottsdale. Come visit. Come on. Come visit. I am not kidding you. We have had nonstop visitors since we've been here. This week alone, we have 3 sets of couples in town. 3.
Wow. Just to see you guys. That's beautiful. Just,
yes. And our boxes. So I know it's been crazy, but it's good. It's been good. Life's good.
There we go. Well, congrats on the move. I actually was I wasn't born in Scottsdale, but I was raised in Scottsdale. So I have a soft spot for Scottsdale, Arizona.
Really? It's lovely here. It's absolutely lovely. And you know what? I just left where you guys are. Literally, I was probably 15 miles from where your facility is in the Santa Cruz area. I was in Los Gatos for the last almost 6 years.
Yeah, she was right in our backyard the whole time.
I know, right?
And now you're in my old backyard.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I was right there where you guys were.
Wow. Okay, and now we're all here.
I know, but I get out there all the time because I work with a lot of women. I have 4 women I Zoom with every Monday that are all sober, that have good time sobriety, and I Zoom with them, and I get out there all the time, and I go and stay, and we meet every Monday at 7 o'clock. Actually, 5 of them now, so out of Bay Area. Yeah.
That's a big workload. Yeah, how do you handle having all those clients on Zoom? Do you feel like it's more difficult on Zoom, or is it easier in person? How has that been for you?
Well, Zoom has, I used Skype before. Okay, so these are women that I sponsor in a program. So gotcha. Those are the ones in the Bay Area. But my clients that I coach in recovery coaching that are not part of a 12-step, I do all sorts of programs with all my clients. I'm able, that. Because I do Skype, I'm able to take on male clients as well.
Nice,
so,
okay.
You know, I can go all across the nation. Yep. So it's pretty easy. I mean, I love it. We use telephone, we use FaceTime, we use Zoom now, and we text. So it's actually really good. Had it not been for that format, I wouldn't be able to take on male clients.
Right, or probably even be able to move to Arizona and keep all these same clients because you'd have to be seeing them in an office or their houses.
Exactly, and I'm also a sober companion. I don't know if you knew that. So I just came back from a big job in Park City and then in Bel Air. And so I can also work with my clients that I coach while I'm on the road.
Here we go. How was your time in Park City? Because that's where I moved to after Scottsdale. I moved to Park City, Utah. And I've lived there for like 6 years. Yeah.
We're close.
We're following each other.
I know.
I love Park City. That's a beautiful place right there.
We were Siamese twins. We were split in half. I'm the blonde half.
The blonde half. I used to be blonde, but I grew up and it turned brown.
You know, well, I was there with a client. So I don't know if you know much about Sober Companions. Do you guys, after your program, do you do a lot of Sober Companion work, or do any of your clients, or do they go to secondary living environments at all or anything like that?
They do go to SLEs. A lot of them will go home and do our outpatient virtually now that we've got going, but we don't have sober companions for them now.
Okay.
Something I think would be great, especially for people who are maybe not quite ready yet.
Right. So that's what I do. I've been a sober companion for probably 10 years now. So obviously I only work with women. You know, women work with women because I literally move into their homes with them.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. What a sober companion does, it depends if they're coming out of detox or inpatient. Generally, I do transfer. So I come in and I pick them up at the facility and we fly them home or drive them home, depending upon where they're going or what they're doing. And then I'll spend sometimes 2 weeks to 30 days with them, getting them situated back in their home, sometimes with their family, their children, things like that. And I literally just move right into their home with them. And get them situated and get them on track and, you know, start them when they're aftercare. And, you know, a lot of times nowadays, since I'm in my 50s, I work with women in their 40s and 50s, and they've been using and drinking a lot of years. And they don't even know so much as to get up, make their bed, eat, you know, get into their recovery program, exercise, meditate. Health, you know, keep on track with whatever aftercare instructions like you would give them.
Mm-hmm.
They get home and they get overwhelmed very easily. You know that. You know all this.
That's very true. Yeah.
I think it would be really beneficial, like I'm just thinking for people who leave our program, because a lot of times they just pack up and go, or someone packs up and goes for them. And if they go right back into that environment without setting it up for success, the first thing they could be going home to is bottles in their cabinets and things like that. And if they're not feeling very strong or stable, or they're by themselves, it could lead them right back to what got them to us in the first place.
Right. So I do a clean out generally first thing when I get there. The alcohol, I go through the medicine chest, everything. I get rid of everything in the house. You know, a lot of times I'll rent a car at the airport or whatever. If there's prescription medication, I lock them in the trunk of the car and then dispose of them at a pharmacy. A lot of them have the pharmacy boxes now, you know, and then just get rid of all that stuff. Because a lot of times when people are sent to rehabs, they've been on all kinds of medications and they're either re-prescribed, or I know you do a real holistic approach, and we get them off all that stuff that everybody and their brother has put them on for years and years and years and years and years. And there's just piles of all this medication. Shopping, you know, those plastic shopping bags of all this stuff that, I mean, and a lot of it's outdated. And I mean, just bags of stuff. And so I go and I lock them in the trunk immediately. It's amazing. It's amazing how much stuff. I mean, under the cabinets. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it's not all narcotics, but it's oh my God. I mean, you know what they come to treatment with. You know.
Well, and half the time they don't even know. Like, we try to, you know, do a good detox based on what they know, but they don't even know what they've been taking or how much or what they're on.
And it's just like this doctor, and you know, they've all been fishing, or not fishing. What's the word?
Doctor shopping.
Shopping. They're shopping, you know, and then of course they put them on antidepressants and anti-this and muscle pains, hoping to get narcotics.
Yeah.
So we got so much stuff. It's just, oh my God. It's like, don't put it in the water system. You're going to kill all your neighbors. You know?
Yeah, don't flush them down the toilets anymore. That's not a good thing to do.
Contaminate the water. Well, that's so cool that you do that. I don't have too much experience with sober companions. One time I had a family member that I was trying to get to treatment and he didn't have a license. Mm-hmm. And he also didn't have any ID, so he couldn't fly into treatment. Right. So a sober companion picked him up from Salt Lake City, Utah, and drove him all the way out to Santa Cruz for like 18-hour drive.
Oh yeah.
But he got here. Yeah.
We do transfers. We do transfers.
Wow, okay.
We don't do minors, so it's not that kidnap kind of thing and bring them, that kind of
right,
thing.
Right, yeah, that's not good, yeah.
Put them on the plane and we get them there, or we drive them, or, you know, whatever it takes. And it's a loving approach. It's always out of love. It's out of love and concern, and it's with the family. So we let the family know that they're taken care of.
Of course.
They're always taken care of. And we have pillows and blankets and snacks and water and whatever else they need in the car. It's always out of love and concern. And let the family know that they are completely in good hands. That's the number one thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because the reality is we can't hogtie people, throw them in a trunk, and just drag them to rehab. So things gotta get them willing. And the best way to do that is to really care for them. So
I mean, they may need it. But it's really important, you know, especially on the way there. And there's always two people who take them, one driving and one sitting in the back with them, always.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad you guys do that. That's an amazing service. Yeah, and I was kind of interested too, Donna, in hearing about how you got into recovery and then also how you got into the recovery coaching and all of that. Because I know for myself, I couldn't imagine coaching in recovery for at least the first 2 years, because I knew I didn't know anything the first 2 years of my recovery.
Dallas, there's days I don't know anything now.
thank you for saying that. I feel the same way.
It depends how I wake up. No. You know, I got sober and clean and sober at 23. When I stayed clean and sober. I mean, I came in at 18. I came in at 18 way back in 1982.
Gotcha, so, okay.
This is before the Betty Fords. This is before, I mean, no one even knew what to do with me back then. I mean, there was like nowhere to go.
There was nothing was figured out yet.
Right. And so, and I'd been already suicidal and in and out of the mental wards and overdosing heavily early on. And I was just strung out and using drugs at an early age and all, you know, the typical story. It just happened long ago to me. So the first time I went into a hospital, I was freebasing. So this is way you and Andy, you would remember this when Richard Pryor was catching himself on fire and all that. That was back then when it was like, oh my God, if you're freebasing, you're a serious drug addict. So you didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, it was a secret. Yeah.
I was like, you do it in the garage. Right. I mean, nowadays, I got to tell you, my girlfriend just in San Francisco, she went and pulled into a gas station. There's two guys in between the pumps smoking crack.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it's like you get your gas and smoke some crack.
That's how they do it up there. Yeah.
Buy the gas. No,
it's like get yourself on fire and smoke some crack, you know. Wash your windshield and light up a bowl. But back then it was like, oh my God. So anyway, so I was exposed to getting sober, but I wasn't done. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. So I went back out 3.5 years, not on cocaine or drugs. Because I knew I'd die, and I just drank for 3.5 years until I knew I was alcoholic. And then I walked back in at 23. You know,
gotcha.
Done a lot more damage. I was big on getting married back then. I think when I came back in, I'd been married like 2.5 times or something. I don't know. You know, I've been married all over the place and, you know, whatever. So the first 5 years of sobriety was all about just getting sober. And get divorced and cleaning up the mortgage and, you know, all that. how I became a coach was, I think it about, I think it was maybe 15 years sober. I'd say between 15 and 18 years sober. I was living in Orange County where I got sober. And I noticed Newport Beach, there was, you know, Newport Beach is really big on, you know, it's like the Riviera of recovery homes. And
right. Real uppity.
It's very uppity. And if you have insurance, you go in and everybody sends their kids there. And I worked with a lot of women, but I noticed they did not have a place for women to go who did not have insurance.
Got it.
That was what it was. And so I came up with an idea to open a place that did not charge, that did not take money from state or federal. And
wow.
So I got my 502c3 and I teamed up with two other people and we opened a place called the Lynn House. And what it was it was a 30-day, it was mostly a detox. Mm-hmm. Because you need all the licensing, as you know, to have therapists and all that come in. And it was ran by volunteers. And we opened it up at the beginning. It had 6 beds and you could come in and we would clothe you, house you, and feed you for 30 days. And then we would get scholarships for secondary living environments.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah, and to this day, it's actually still open, and we've had over 2,000 women go through.
Wow. Ooh.
I know, right?
That's so amazing.
Because it was needed. And,
it was, yeah.
Yeah, and they're lined
still
up.
Still needed, yeah.
Right. So it's kind of a detox. It's ran by volunteers, and it's scheduled, and everything's donated, and we do little fundraisers. I'm not so much involved in that anymore. But that's how I started, you know, by literally holding women as they came in puking and being there and showing other women how to take care of women who really needed it.
I love that. And as we can see, you had a lot of sobriety under your belt before you even thought about approaching helping other people in recovery, it seems like.
Right, right. And that's just what I was taught. You know, you've got to, mm-hmm. you know, keep it, you've got to give it away.
Well said. And I think I would imagine that that was just probably so rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Like just imagining that. And, you know, because one of the things that breaks my heart even to this day is trying to figure out how to get somebody into treatment and having there just be so many barriers to getting help. So I love the idea of you eliminating a barrier for people to get help. I think that's so cool.
Because of the monetary and the insurance and the, you know, just the crap, basically.
The crap, yeah. Yeah, total crap.
You, as you guys know, and as I know, a lot of, you know, well, at a year and a half sober, my brother died of this disease, right? And I come from a perfect little family of 6 kids, a mom and dad had been married, and from the outside were perfect. And then my brother was found dead shot in the head in a motel room.
Oh, God.
That's, you know, but you know, that's the reality of this, the disease. That's just, you know, I'm nothing special. I mean, I'm a drug addict alcoholic. I mean, my family's nothing special. I'm not, why should we not get hit with death?
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. It's very true.
No,
yeah, who are we to avoid it?
Right. You know, just because I'm a pretty girl doesn't mean that, like, I'm surprised I'm not dead. And I watched, even in Newport Beach where I got sober, I watched a lot of people die. I watched girls that I sponsor die. I know you guys are in recovery, you know.
Yep.
You know, if you're a drug addict alcoholic, we don't have a lot of options.
Mm-mm.
No, it's just a very high-risk lifestyle. There are so many dangers to yourself from other people. Environments you're putting yourself in, it is very high risk. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's if you're really, I know for me, I'll speak for me, if I'm really, really honest with myself, it's A, amazing I didn't die. B, it's amazing I didn't kill anybody else.
That's a very good point. I couldn't agree anymore with those things.
Thanks.
For you and myself.
Right.
And probably Angie. I've heard her story too, and I'm glad she didn't kill anybody or herself either.
Yeah. Right. I just didn't have any respect for it. I mean, every time I drank, I drove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
That they're alone. I mean, that's just reality. It's sad, but it's true. I mean, it's ugly. It's ugly. My disease is ugly. It's not pretty. It isn't pretty. And I think that that's one of the biggest messages that I carry. I really carry the honest truth about who I am and what I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I really do. And it's really important because I've had a lot of girls I've worked with die. In fact, the first group of girls that came through the house, the Lynn house that I worked with, the free place.
Yes.
Six girls in the first 4 months, one of those girls died.
Oh man, that's brutal.
But that's the truth. That's the truth of our disease. And it's sad. And so I hope people understand that if they don't seek help, if they don't go to your place, if they don't do something, if they have a disease like I do, if they drink and use drugs like me, that will happen. If I decide to go out and drink, because I could pick up a drink like anybody else. I'm 33 years sober, but every day I make a decision if I want to drink or not. Do I want to continue in recovery? Or do I want to go back into relapse and bad ideas and bad ways? Every day I have that decision. What do I want to do?
Stay sober.
Right.
Yeah. Being sober is pretty good these days.
Yeah. I mean, I still have that choice. I still have the choice, you know, so.
Well, and it's lifelong work. I think those of us that have been in recovery for a while, we realize it's not just, oh, I did that, I'm better, all fixed. Like, you got to continue working on yourself. Keep doing the work. Keep going through the steps. Keep digging deeper. It's just so many layers to it that it is a lifelong process. It's not a one and done. You got to keep doing the work.
Right. I evolve as a woman, as a human being, as a mother, as a recovery coach, as a sober woman. As a wife, I've evolved every year of my life, and so is my sobriety, so is my recovery. Like, I'm gonna give you a perfect example, okay? So when I got sober, there was the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I got sober, okay? So when I went and trained to become a recovery coach, I was so narrow-minded, I was so stubborn, I was so, way you gotta do it. This is the way, my way, my way. And then I realized, you know what? Not everybody gets sober that way. There's tons of ways. There's smart recovery, for one. Your program teaches smart recovery. And I know a lot of people, including my clients, have gotten sober with smart recovery. And it works. And it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, see, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's similar for us. Like, we had to realize that we're not a one size fits all either. And that's how we developed our curriculum and modality, because not everybody learns the same way. And we've got to be able to reach more and more people.
Right. And so there's so much out there for recovery right now. And for me as a coach, I have to be open-minded to understand not everybody's the same. Not everybody's the same. And it took a lot because, I mean, I was brainwashed, you know. But as I learn, and as it's like my recovery has changed and I have evolved as a person over the years.
Yeah, well, I think that's just natural. What got us sober, we know it works. So we want to impart that to others. It takes, you know, a lot of years of experience and being acclimated to other things to understand that they can work too. We used to be very much the same. We were very close-minded, and we've since, we even hosted a conference a couple of years called Modality, which invited all different kinds of treatment in, so we could all see how much we have similarities, not just differences. And so we could help more people with those things.
Right. Because more, exactly. So you can help more people, and that's the answer.
Yeah, there's plenty of people to help. I mean, there's not, none of us need to corner the market. There's endless people for us to help.
Yeah, I'm so glad we brought that up too, because I think that one of the things that I talk about a lot, at least with the clients that I work with too, is that the way I got sober isn't how they need to. It's like, if I limit my view or perception of it's my way or the highway, this is what worked for me, so it has to work for you, then the chances of being able to help more people is very limited. My life is very specific. Right. So I love that you said that, because it's such a great point. And, you know, in my experience of getting sober too, it was very like my way or the highway. Like, people just, telling me how to do it. And obviously there's similarities and there's some common themes of, you know, you should probably stay away from certain people and you should probably clean up and take some responsibility and talk about, yeah, of course. But I just had this very narrow-minded view that wasn't serving our clients anymore.
That's it. It wasn't serving our clients, Dennis.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's been probably my biggest takeaway in recovery is, and I learned it from someone named TJ Woodward, where he said, like, what is, like, how hard is it to have all the answers for everybody? Like, what if you didn't have to have the answers? Mm-hmm. What if your clients already had the answers and you were just there to help them explore that?
Right.
So I don't know. Do you have any experience with that? Is with your coaching?
As far as not having the answers?
Yeah, or just as far as thinking. No, that's funny. That's a good point. No, but as far as like feeling this obligation to need to fix or solve for your clients?
Well, okay. So let me explain. A lot of people don't understand what a coach does. Versus, mm-hmm. So like a therapist works in the past and all the baggage and stuff. Okay. A coach works in the present. So a lot
I like
of
that.
Yeah, so that's the difference between a coach and like what a therapist. People always go, well, how do you deal with all their little issues of being a child? I don't, please.
Oh, I don't, yeah.
Their that's family beautiful. Of that's origin beautiful. Or all that. You know, call a psychologist, right? I deal with the present. I deal with what's bothering them. So the very first thing I do as a recovery coach is I have kind of my own curriculum. I send out a very detailed sheet of questions.
Okay.
Lots of questions for them to answer. And what they, a lot of times they don't realize that it's almost the same questions over and over in different format. And I find out what it is. They're almost their secret desires are. Mm-hmm. What it is they're missing, what it is they really want, what are you missing and what do you want to do? And a lot of my clients actually are not newly sober, most of them. Most of my clients are between 5 and 15 years sober and they're stuck.
They're got stuck it.
In life. A lot of them have gotten or have received the gifts of sobriety and they're like, is this all there is? Or it's... what am I missing in life? I've got the wife, I've got the husband, I've got the toys, I've got the job, I've got the this, I've got the that. Now, what am I missing? And through this series of questions, I find out usually what it is they want. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to kind of just go, this is what I see. Am I right? Am I wrong? Am I right? Am I wrong? And if I'm wrong, I'm like, okay, well, let's investigate a little bit more. And then we get into that and I go, okay, now that we kind of have an idea of what you want, let's set goals.
Got it.
And then let's work on these. And so a lot of them are what they want spiritually, what they want financially, what they want. And there's like 5 or 6 different levels of things. And we're able to set the goals. My idea of coaching, I don't want to keep you coaching forever. You don't need me forever. I'm not a therapist. I don't want you in my life forever. I want you to be happy. But you know what I mean? This isn't about a money grab. You know, I'm very, very blessed that fear of financial insecurity has left me and that God has helped me understand that money is something that is more like an energy. It comes and it goes and like I can give it and take it and like I don't have to be fearful. So it's not like a money grab. For me, it's like, let's find some happiness and move on.
Yep. Yeah. It's like having someone, giving them the water wings. Once they know how to do it, taking the wings off, you're like, look, you're swimming by yourself. I'm done.
Right. Yay. And you know what? If you jam, text me. I don't need your money. Text me. Let's find out. If you need a little spruce up, let's go here. Right?
Yeah.
So that's what it is. I don't want to have you for more than 3 months because probably you're going to bug me.
Yeah. No, I love that.
you have to go now. I think you're great. Bye. Go to your wife. Go to your husband.
Yeah, go live. Go live now. We know how. Let's go do it. No, I love that too, because a lot of times I feel like, you know, I see clients come in with psychologists and they've been with therapists, and I feel like they get slow rolled, where it is more of this, the longer you're with me, the more money that I get. And the slower that we take things, the more money I get.
That's ideal in the now. What is it you want? How do we get you there? What makes you happy? Is it happiness? If you have stuff to process, I send you somewhere else.
Of course. Yeah, I love that.
I don't want to process your junk.
Yeah, and we're the same way. We got 60 days to figure this out. Let's go. let's get started.
You figure it out. We're here to guide you, but we want you to figure it out for yourself. We're not going to tell you what that problem is.
I'm coming to work for you guys. I can't believe I'm gone.
Yeah. We would love to have you, Dawn. That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
So that's what I do as a recovery coach. You know, some of them have wanted to write books forever. You know, I wanted to write a book. I want to learn a second language. I'm like, well.
Why not?
Okay, so this week I want you to make 5 phone calls. And the next week you're going to tell me how they went. Okay, now pick one. You know, it's just stupid accountability. But they can't seem to get out of their own way. That's what it is.
It's amazing. I mean, I recently, and I've never had one of these before, but I spent like the first 6 months of this year with a business coach, and I've never had a business coach before. And it was a very similar thing, you know, just kind of reining me back in and putting me back on, giving me homework. And it changed my life. It helped me so much because I didn't need a therapist. I needed somebody who didn't work for me. Well, I mean, you know, I pay him, but looking at things from a different area to keep me on the rails and he's actually the one that gave me the idea to start podcasting. You know, there was a passion for this that I had from a very long time ago. And just, yeah, same sort of thing. And then once we reached our time, and I'm like, I'm good to go. Thank you so much.
Right. And that's what a coach does. That it's like a mentor. That's what we do. And yay. And I'm glad. Good. That's a good coach. That's a good
coach. Of course.
Good for you, Angie. Yay. Yeah. I love that.
Well, and I can see for you how it's difficult due to the addict mentality where they want to stay clinging to you. You know, there's that natural need for codependence. And so I can see why you have to sort of cut that cord probably, you know, so that people don't just want to keep, you know, clinging to that.
I know. And that's what I say. It's like, okay, you have to go now.
Yeah.
Politely. Yeah.
Go now.
I like you, but bye.
I'm like, okay, you have to go now.
That is super funny. So I have another question for you too, Donna. I was thinking like, you know, as you're getting people to get out of their comfort zone and chase their dreams and do the things that they want, we see a lot of that here as well. Getting sober sometimes is that goal that we're trying to get the clients to chase or identify. What are like the most common barriers that come up between something in theory that sounds pretty easy, like you want to get a job, you want to get sober, stop using drugs, go to an interview. Like what are the barriers that get in the way of those things that seem kind of so simple?
Okay, so one of the things I always have them do is I have them make a list of principles.
Okay.
And what principles are to me is I have them make a list of principles or old, we used to call them old tapes, a list of things in their head that life has been telling them that are lies.
Like limiting beliefs or like hand-me-down beliefs.
Right. Or something they heard, their mom told them, girls read it in Cosmo. who knows? You know, who knows?
Where it came from, yeah.
Right. So like for a man, it would be like, I need to have $5 million in the bank. I should be an executive. I should have my master's degree. A girl is I'm bad if I had one. If I slept with a man on a first date, I should have 2.3 kids and married at 30. I'm bad if I ever got divorced. Whatever it is that's limiting us. So we write it out. They write it out and they bring them to me, usually about 8 or 10, but they're pretty strong. And gotcha. Then talk to them. So they give me a line and they say, like, for you, how old are you, Dallas?
28.
Okay, so you're 28. So a lot of them for a man is like, I should make my nut, the word nut, by the age of 40, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, you should have your made your money and be established by the age of 40. It's very common. It's a thought in a man's head for some reason. And if you don't, a lot of times a man will consider himself a loser. He's a loser.
Right, or a failure or something like that.
Or a failure or whatever they label. And I'll say, okay, you're a failure because, and then they'll say, because, blah, 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 blah. And I'll say, and that means what? And they'll say, that means this. And I said, and that means what? And we get down and we break down these fears. Every one of them, each and every one. And it helps them understand their thinking process and how much they lie to themselves. And what happens is they'll be driving in their car and they'll go, God, I need to try and sell this deal. Yeah, but I haven't made my nut and then this and I da 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 da, and it'll stop them in their path. Because that initial lie that they've been telling themselves all these years, stop them.
Got it. Yeah, you know, that makes total sense.
But that, and we break down each one of those. And so when we do that, it wipes away all those excuses because they know, they go, God, I've been telling myself that 20 years. It's a lie.
Yeah, and they finally get to see the truth.
Right. And so then they go back to doing the work. It's like, oh, that's nonsense. You know, oh, yeah. Or we're like, oh, you know, I'm allowed to have a loving relationship. I'm valuable and lovable, even if I sleep with them on the first date, because you know what? I'm a 38-year-old woman. I'm allowed to have sex.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, so, yeah, a lot of it's subconscious. They don't even know it's there until you point it out to them.
I'm like, so wait a minute. So that makes you a tramp because why? Well, because I heard that in the 11th grade. And then what? And they're like, oh my God, really? I'm 38 years old and I'm still believing that? I'm like, exactly.
Yeah, it hasn't been like challenged or questioned in so long that we just still run off that software. Like it's just still super valid.
Right. And then we clear it. We just clear it out.
I love that. Yeah. Or update it. Like, no, I am 38 and I get to have sex now. There we go. New software. Roll with that. Yeah.
I'm valuable and I'm worthy and I get to make my own decisions. I'm a grown up.
Yeah, oh. I love that because I think that's where all the real change comes from, is like examining our own thoughts and realizing which ones aren't working anymore and which ones are outdated and which ones we still care about, and that we get to decide which ones actually matter.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a great answer. Yeah. Because I was wondering because of the patterns, you know, I know you've worked with so many people that at this point there has to be just these glaring patterns of things getting in the way of people making progress.
If when they're stuck, we'll hit that.
Okay.
That usually clears them up. And then as we move along, I'll go back to that. What pattern, what principle are you working on right now? Oh yeah.
There it is.
And they'll see, and then they'll be able to do it themselves. So, yeah.
There we go. Well, thank you for asking or responding to that. I appreciate that.
All right. So Donna, I know just because our listeners are going to be really intrigued and I'm just going to want to switch gears a little bit because okay. I know recently you wrote a book and I really
want to. Wait a minute. Ready? I even went and got one out of a box.
Yes.
Oh.
Here it is.
The cover,
I want to read that. It's like very encapturing. I want to read that.
This is my mouth. Isn't that funny? That's my mouth.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I can see it now.
Perfect. and this is the name of my article in Recovery Today magazine, Naked Truth. It's so funny. My nickname with most people I work with is called the Velvet Hammer because I'm so brutal. You know, I just tell them how it is. I know. Yeah. Because I because obviously, you know, I did Playboy, so we called it Naked, and I tell the truth. I'm pretty harsh on the truth with people I work with. So that's where we got the Naked Truth, right?
That's perfect.
Right. And then the Fall and Rise. Isn't that cute?
Yes. I love it. I think it's so fitting. I'm gonna read that book.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
So in the book, how long was that in the making? How long were you writing that before you decided to actually publish it? Or was it once, you know, and I'll let you talk about what led up to you putting that book out or the timeliness of when you put it out?
So it's funny. So for years, people have told me I should write my story. And it was like, yeah, whatever. Everybody's got a story. And then, you know, it was funny. So my co-author of this book, his name's Chris Epstein, and he's actually a very well-known author. He's from Orange County, and I happened to run into him right in between. He had just finished John Oates, you know, from Hall & Oates, John Oates' memoir. And it was just being published. So he's a big author. He's like a grown-up where I'm just like this dumb girl who did a book, right? And, and so we were talking one day, and I said, you know, people are telling me I should write this, blah, blah, blah. And he didn't know much about my story. And he goes, well, why don't we sit down and take some notes, Donna? And we were sitting down, and he was tape recording me. And this is how it happened. And it was during the time of the Bill Cosby hearings. And I had, like, you know, because being in 12-step program, we do inventories and we write and we tell people about our past and we put it away. And I hadn't talked about Bill Cosby in 20 years. Right? Gotcha. There's nothing to say. My family didn't know about it. My sisters, my husband didn't even know about it. Not that I had kept it from him. There just wasn't anything to say, right?
Yeah, of course.
So we were talking, and I told him the story about being molested by a photographer before Bill, a little bit about my story, blah, blah, blah. And I said, and then there was the incident with Bill Cosby, and blah, 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 blah. And he stopped. He goes, what? I go, you know, we don't even need to put that in the book. I'd rather not. And he stopped the tape recorder. He goes, what are you talking about? And I said, yeah, I said, you know, I had an affair. I don't know what you even really want to call it, a relationship. I said, with Cosby for like a year and a half, 2 years. And he goes, did you just say you were 16 years old? I said, yeah, I didn't even have my driver's license. And he goes, you know, Donna, that's against the law. And I said, yeah, I know. I've done a lot of work about that. I said, yeah, it was actually child abuse and all that. And he goes, you know, maybe we should talk a little bit more
about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, honestly, like my family doesn't even know about it. So I don't really know if I want to put it into a book.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, make a long story short, he called his agent and his agent jumped on it. And we sent it out to a bunch of people out of New York. And because Bill Cosby is so litigious, I think that's the correct word. The big firms loved it, but they wouldn't touch it because he is so dangerous. And he hadn't been convicted yet. They loved it, but they wouldn't touch it.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you know what? That's just a sign for me not to touch this right now. And I put it away. I just put it away. You know what? I don't think he should be in it. I'm just going to put it away, blah, blah, blah. And so Chris and I just kind of put it away and we didn't touch it. And then one day I thought, you know what? I'm going to write it. Maybe about 4 or 5 months later, I started writing and Chris gave me a little outline and I started writing. And like 6, 7 months, I had it written and Chris did this and I did this and Chris did this and I did this and blah, blah, blah. And then another company picked it up. And we did not put it out until after he was convicted. I waited.
How long was that wait?
I don't know. I don't remember. It's pretty blurry. It was a lot of work to write the book.
I could imagine, yeah.
He's a really mean man. And he's and a perfect example. I wrote in the book, because when I went into treatment at 18, I mean, he was calling the treatment facility when I was 18 looking for me.
Jeez.
And they, like, we used to have these chalkboards on the treatment where, like, you know, the payphone, and people would write chalk or stuff, whatever, on the thing. And I remember answering the phone, and I just said, you know, Billy, I can't talk to you. I'm in treatment. And he just, I remember him going, you know, Donna, you were a lot funner when you were drinking. I mean, that's, you know, that's who he was. I mean, he was a bad guy.
Yeah, that's evil.
Yeah, he was a bad guy, you know, and you know, I've got the story, and it's only a, you know, it's a small chapter in the book. It's a really, honestly, it's a small chapter. I was a mess before and after him, you know, but there was a 26-year age difference there.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Definitely. That's a big age difference. And
yeah,
when I was 16, I thought I was like 25, and I thought I knew everything. And it wasn't until after I got sober that I realized there was an issue. And I realized, because I didn't ever want to talk about it, and I didn't want to tell people about it. And that's when you're hiding, and you know, you guys know, there's shame, and there's
a toxic shame,
you know. Yeah, yeah. Just like I didn't want to talk about the photographer before him when I was like 14. He was the father of a girlfriend from high school, and it was all wrong, and I couldn't get away from him, and he stalked me, and, you know, it was just, the whole thing was bad. So when I got away from him, and I got an agent, and then someone gave my picture to Cosby, and Cosby wanted to meet me, and I went to Pittsburgh to do a children's show, and then all of this, just, it was like I got away from him and I became a real model, and I didn't even want to be a model, I wanted to be a florist, you know. It was just
I like, so, flowers. Yeah,
right. My whole life was just bizarre, you know. It was just bizarre, and here I am later, you know, all these years later. So, you know, and then became a centerfold, then I became a cult movie actress, and then I became, you know, everything but the president of the United States. I mean, it's just like I just rolled into whatever anybody wanted me to be. It just didn't matter, you know. It's like, I'll be there. Yeah, let's just sign a paycheck and I'm coming. You know, it's like, whatever.
Yeah. It's like, whatever. So out of all of that, what's been your favorite part?
Being a mom.
Being a mom, okay. That's a pretty good one.
Opening the Lynn House, working with all the women, you know, just now, you know, Mondays, seeing the girls I sponsor, amazing, amazing young women. They're just amazing. They blow my mind. My son, he's 25. You know, I was a single mom for a lot of years, and you know, he's 25. I'm a 25-year-old. He's never seen me drink.
You know, love that.
No kidding. You know, and he's a cybersecurity analyst, right? For like Lockheed. He's like this, we've got this really big job. My kid, right? And look at him. It's just like, I look at him. You got to understand. So I dropped out of high school in the 10th grade, right? Because I'm modeling, I'm traveling all over, and I'm doing this stuff. And plus I'm getting high, and it's hard to show up, you know? And by the way, I just went back to high school. I finished. I graduated, right? You'll see it. It's a picture of my book. I just went back.
Hey, there we go.
Right? I went back to high school, and I had to go in high school, not the GED, because I couldn't pass algebra, right? I went back, like right before I wrote my book, I went back, and I'm sitting in there, right? Now these kids, they're like the dropouts.
It's like Billy Madison.
Right? They're the dropouts, and they're the stoners. It was a continuation school, right? And here I am, front of the class, I had everything but Snoopy lunch pail, right? And I'm sitting there, and I'm showing up. I did 2 years and 10 months, right? And then I graduated. Right, I have my little hat, and I put little rhinestones, said 39-year plan check on the hat. I'm walking. And then I got this kid, right, who's like, who's working for Lockheed, who's like a cybersecurity analyst, and he says things that I'm like, will you sponsor me? He just blows my mind. I'm like, how did you belong to me?
Like, well, you've set an amazing example to him his whole life. I don't know why you're surprised.
just blows my mind. Like, I look at him, he's like 20, he's almost 26. I'm like, when I was your age, I was like on my second, third marriage. I'm like, wow, my God. You know, he's so balanced. I'm like, at his age, I couldn't separate my blacks from my whites still. You know, I'm like 3 years sober and I could barely balance a checkbook. You know, and he's like working for the government. I'm like, are you serious?
Damn.
Right? I'm just like, you gotta be kidding. He's like first generation who graduated college in my family. I'm like at university. I'm like, really? It just blows my mind, but that's what getting sober does, you know? Just like, whoa.
Yeah, those are the promises. Those are the gifts, you know? I love that. It's like, and I always hold true to that, you know, like don't leave before the miracle happens. And you know, that's the miracle. That's the beautiful part. It's like, none of it makes sense, but it's happening. And that's amazing. I don't know how it happened.
And I'm sitting in high school doing all my little algebra and I'm taking pictures and I'm sending it to him. He's texting me back. And he goes, that's really great, Mom. I'm so proud, but you got number six wrong. This is my life. I'm so lucky. I'm a little. So that's what it is. That's my life in a nutshell. I've had a good life. You know, I mean, I've done everything from, you know, dancing on tables at the Playboy Mansion to holding girls' hair back while they're puking at the Lynn House.
You checked all the boxes.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely an inspiration to many women everywhere and in recovery. And I really believe by you being honest and sharing your story, I know there's a lot going on in the world right now with rumors of, you know, pretty high name people being involved in pedophile rings and everything. And I hope due to your vulnerability and honesty that more women will start coming forward so we can really try to stop what's going on and what's been going on for a really long time and uncover that and expose it for what it is. Yeah. Because like you said, you know, it's at the root of a lot of addiction. There's so much shame and guilt and everything that goes in that. And you know, having put women through our program for 26 years, almost one for one, every woman has gone through something like that.
Absolutely. And it's a you know what, it's a silent killer. It really is a silent killer. And it's not only women, you know what, it's men too. And I think one of the biggest things, the myth, because I've done a lot of speaking on sexual abuse and pedophiles, and because I was a minor, I think the biggest thing on predators is that the, you know, back when all this happened for me, we didn't talk about it back then. And now we talk about it more and there's a lot of exposure for it. But I think the biggest thing is that predators, we have this vision still in our mind that the predator is the man who drives up in the car and he snatches you and he drives off. And that certainly does happen. That mm-hmm. happens. Or he's in the coat and he flashes. And yes, that happens. But 8 out of 10 times, the predator of your children or of your someone teenager is someone you know. He is within the family structure, meaning he's a relative or close to your family structure or a neighbor. He has been within your house. He has sat at your dinner table. You have sent your child to his home or his belonging. In other words, you have sent your child to his home for lessons. You have sent your child to his home for Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, somewhere, swim team, somewhere. You have sent. The predator needs to make his way into the family of trust.
Of course. Wow, that's scary.
It is. And I've done a lot of speaking, a lot of research on this. And so that is one of the things that I try when I talk a lot, when I talk on my book, that I work with moms to explain that the predator is within the family, within the family. And both predators in my life were within my family structure. I mean, people go, Donna, how did your parents not know about Bill? Because if you look in my book, there's pictures of my parents with Bill Cosby. He knew my sisters. He knew my family. He took us all on vacation. We went to Vegas. We went to Bill Hara's because he worked for Bill Hara at Hara's casinos. He worked in Vegas. He worked in Atlantic City. I mean, we traveled with him. My parents traveled with him. He would send my sister flowers when she couldn't have a baby. I mean, everybody in my family knew him. And they said, how could your parents not know that you were sleeping with Bill Cosby. How could they not know that? And the simple answer is, why would they think I was? Why would they think Bill would hit on a 16-year-old child in 1978, the man who was the spokesperson for Coca-Cola, the man who was the spokesperson for pudding and Jell-O, the man who was the spokesperson for Rolex? Why would he be interested in a 16-year-old child? Because he was a predator. And he had to get into the family circle in order to do that.
Yeah, that is scary.
So what would you say would be some warning signs, some advice to parents out there that this could be happening, or okay, what to look for?
So the grooming signs are an adult who is taking interest in a child in your family. Adults do not take, I do not go to my girlfriend's house and take special interest in one of their children.
Good point, yeah.
Unless I have a child and they play together. I don't take interest in someone's child. First of all, I don't really like kids, especially other people's. Right? But I don't take interest in it. Do you take interest in someone's child?
I don't. I don't have children, but nor do I take interest in children, yeah.
You don't. Because you're not a predator, but a predator will. And they will find an interest that child will have.
See, right.
They will find an interest that will interest the child through the adults. Scouting, modeling, kayaking, freaking carpet weaving, whatever. Piano, photography. Something that might interest that child that they can do together, or will separate the child from the family, but it'll be very slow. Then there will be certain things that the parent will do, that the predator will do, but it won't be in your interest or in your presence. They will also start buying gifts for the child. That's the next thing. They will buy gifts. Mm-hmm. But the predator will also do things like start to touch them because they will make the child's body part of their own, and it'll become very subtle. They'll start touching to make it normal that the predator touches normal places. Oh, it's so good to see you. And it hugs little things. So it becomes normal. Mm-hmm. Normalizes the touch. And maybe months later, before he ever lays hand or she lays hand on the child, the touch has now become normalized. These are all grooming practices. The adult calls the child. The adult will call the child. Call the child. Where the fuck am I as an adult? Did you ever see the thing with Michael Jackson on HBO? They did a thing on Michael Jackson where Michael Jackson groomed the children. And the mother would say, Michael would call my son, and they would talk for hours.
That's weird. Yeah.
What are you talking about? Cosby would call my house all the time. He would call. The photographer would just show up. Photographer would call me. Yeah. It was the exact same thing with both of them.
And your parents were very trusting. Obviously, they had none of this in their system, so they had zero reason to suspect. They just thought, how cool, this person really likes us and likes my kid. That's amazing.
But photographer wanted to teach me lessons. He thought I would be a good model. He thought this, he thought that. And it was slowly over time. And then it happened with the photographer, and I couldn't say a word. He had taken a couple semi-nude pictures. I was afraid he was going to show them. And that was it. A couple suggested pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he made you feel bad or weird about that.
Like lateral on me.
Mm-hmm. Is that when you started using? Was that the start of your drug and alcohol use?
A serious drug. And I had been smoking weed and partying a little bit, but that was when the drug really bad. The suicide attempts, the overdoses, the mental hospitals. Yes. And then I went from there. And I remember after all that, trying to get away from him, I mean, he stalked me. He'd show up at my house. To try and get me over his house. I mean, it was insane. And then I remember I took the pictures and I went to a modeling. I went to a modeling agency, and the modeling agency just so happened that day, and this is all in my book, that day said, they're having a casting call in LA for a Seiko watch commercial. Why don't you go up? You can cross. And I looked at my mom and I'm like, okay, let's just go. And we drove up and I landed the commercial. Just like, and all of a sudden I was a professional model and I didn't man anymore. And that got me away from him. And that was the best thing that ever happened. And I had some new pictures taken by a new photographer and I had a shot, and a girl on my street played tennis with Cosby, right? Because she was a pro in Vegas. She took that picture, sent it and showed it to Cosby. And literally within a couple days, Cosby called me and said, why don't you come out to Pennsylvania and shoot on my children's show, Kangaroo? And I went straight from him to Cosby.
Wow. Yeah, I've never heard this story before. So I feel like I'm captivated.
Yeah. What's interesting, and I talked about, and I think is extremely interesting. And when you said it, it was like, of course. You said that predators will have an innate sense if you've already been basically, taken advantage of.
Yeah, because I had low self-esteem. I couldn't look you in the eyes. I was beat up, man. I was beat up. And my mom was grateful I had a mentor who could take over my career, and he was making all these calls and doing this and that, William Morris, and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden the suicide attempt stopped for a while because it wasn't so creepy. It was different, but it wasn't so creepy, you know?
Of course, yeah.
You guys are just going to have to read the book.
Oh, yeah. We definitely will.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, I definitely, where can I get this book? Where could the audience get the book?
You can get it right on Amazon.
Easy. Amazon Prime. It'll be here tomorrow.
Perfect. I'll be quicker than me shipping it to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm excited.
I've got boxes of them, but I don't know where they are yet. I opened one. I said, there's one. Good, I'll hold it up.
Bingo.
It's in one of your pods you're going to uncover in the next 2 months.
Scary thought.
Have you done the Audible for this yet?
Have I done what?
The Audible, recorded the Audible
version. No, I didn't do an Audible.
Your voice is amazing. I think it would be great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been suggested. I didn't do an Audible. I did. It's in that little Kindle, and it's in that. Okay. So if you have a Kindle, you can pull it down tonight.
Perfect. Okay. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to order. I'm going to one-click buy it in the next 20 minutes. So consider one sold, maybe two sold, and most of our audience.
And you know what? I'll tell you what. Send me an address, and I'll send you guys some autograph copies.
Oh, there you go.
That would be amazing.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
More than happy to.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. And yeah, I guess also for our audience, is there any, if they want to get in touch with you, if they're interested in your recovery coaching or sober companionship, where else could the audience find you or people in recovery find you?
So you can always find me on Instagram. That's always an easy place to find me. And it's under Donna, D-O-N-A, Spear, S-P-E-I-R, Recovery.
Okay.
And you can also find me on my website at donnaspear.com. My mom, I don't know why my mom did this. Donna, D-O-N-A, Spear, S-P-E-I-R, and I always say E-I-E-I-R. It's like a star.
Thanks, Mom.
I'm like, really? Really? So it's donnaspear.com. You can always find me on my website there too. So that's where you can find me. And I have coachings there. Instagram, you can find me. I'm on too much on Facebook right now. I'm a busy girl.
Busy girl. There's nothing good on Facebook anyways.
Just like you guys. I'm all love it. You guys are busy too. How's your super place busy. In Tahoe? Tell me about your Tahoe place.
So it's our shorter term program. So it's like our 30-day program. So they'll do our detox here because we have all our detox done here in Santa Cruz. And the 30-day program is up there and they do mindfulness. Sort of a, not a mini version because obviously you can't do as much in 30 days as you can in the full program. But we still get amazing results. And, the facility backs right up to the National Forest. So the backyard is the forest. It's beautiful. So they go on mindfulness hikes down to the lake, and it's a beautiful place to have rehab. Much like here, we overlook the Monterey Bay. So both of our properties are just the perfect place if you want to get sober, where you can just enjoy nature and the environment.
I saw your pictures. They're just incredible. I'm like, wait a minute, I don't need rehab, but can I come for a vacation?
Yes. You can come. We'll give you a special room.
Right. I'll bet. You give me a special room. I'll bet you will. We got the dog over there. She's crazy. Put her over there.
Give her the special room.
Are you kidding? We'll put you to work. We'll have you run some of our groups.
I'll tell you what. I would love to come out and meet some of your people. Next time I'm out there, I'd love to come out and talk to some of your people. Love to. So
okay. Anytime. We're going to hold you to that because, we're right over the hill from where you used to live. So we're right here.
Lucky people. They really are. You guys are fabulous. I think, and I've seen the pictures. It's a beautiful place. So wow. Good for you.
Thank you so much, Donna. Yeah, and thank you for being on the show. This has been awesome. I'm definitely excited to read your book, and it was definitely good getting to know you and meeting you technically over the computer. But we should definitely get you here in person, do some groups, maybe follow up on the podcast, and I can tell you about what I thought about the book.
Oh. No. Anyway, thank you. You guys are great. Thank you guys so much for having me. I can't wait to meet you in person. That would be that. Okay?
All right. Have a great night. I know you have a nice dinner planned.
Ooh.
Yeah. So yeah. Go enjoy your evening, and thank you very much for being on our show.
Okay, you guys. Thank you so much. It was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Have a good night. All right, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you found some value from listening. And if you did, please share with someone you know or love. You can find us on social media. We are at Elevate Addiction Services.
And if you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, please call our toll-free, confidential 24-hour helpline at 833-33-SOBER or visit our website at elevaterehab.org.